So this week, we are going to start out in the book of Matthew. This week's parasha is Shalach, and it's in Numbers, and we're going to come over to it in a little bit. But we're going to start out with the parable of the sower in Matthew 13. Okay, in Matthew 13, starting in verse 3, I'm going to read a section, and then I'm going to skip forward, and I'll tell you when we do that. So starting in verse 3, "And Yeshua spoke many things to them in parables, saying, Behold, the sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seeds fell beside the road, and the birds came and ate them up. And others fell upon the rocky places, where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up, because they had no depth of soil. But when the sun had risen, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And others fell among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked them out. And others fell on the good soil, and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. He who has ears, let him hear." Then in verse 18, Yeshua explains, "Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is the one on whom seed was sown beside the road. And the one on whom seed was sown on the rocky places, this is the man who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away. And the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. And the one on whom seed was sown on the good soil, this is the man who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and brings forth some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. And in Luke, it actually says, with perseverance. It's like I want to take all of them, kind of put them together and just, anyway. But that's a picture there of their perseverance brought forth that. Now with this, they took hold of the good news of the kingdom by faith. Those to whom the seed came, right? And that good news of the kingdom, when coupled with faith and perseverance, brought forth fruit, right? And that was the goal, that was the objective, but there were many obstacles along the way that would prevent that seed from reaching the fullness of what it was intended for, right? Because, I mean, there were some who received it and they sprouted up, but man, when the attack came, they couldn't stand, right? And there were some who took it, but it was choked out by other things in the world, right? And then, of course, the adversary is always on the prowl seeking to steal that seed and not let it even germinate, right? But then there are those who, through faith and perseverance, brought forth a multiple times what the original seed was, right? And so we have that. What this teaches us is we really need to guard that seed. That we need to guard that seed and that seedling that's coming up. Because if we aren't careful with that, then there's a chance that it may not actually come to the stage at which it can bear fruit. Right? So we have to hold fast in faith and cultivate the soil that allows the seeds to germinate. Right? Now, one of the questions is, well, what is being sown, right? Like in that parable, it's the good news of the kingdom. The good news of the kingdom was being sown. But if we go to the next parable here in Matthew that Yeshua tells, I'm not going to read the whole thing, I'm just going to read the first part of it. Starting in verse 24, he presented another parable to them saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men were sleeping, his enemies came and sowed tares also among the wheat and went away. But when the wheat sprang up and bore grain, then the tares became evident also. And the slaves of the landowner came and said to him, 'Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?' And he said to them, 'An enemy has done this.'" Okay? So there's more than one type of seed being sown, right? There's the good news of the kingdom, and then there's falsehood. And lies and deceptions, right? And when I this came to my mind earlier this week. It was like, well, what about the opposite of the parable of the good sower, right? Because the parable of the good sower, in that case, the seed fell in four places, and only one place did it actually reach its objective. But I thought about then, well, how effective are seeds of doubt? How effective are seeds of, you know, conflict and stuff like that? Well, I don't see them being as a one in four thing. When I look around, I see that those are the things that take root. And those are the things that survive in the rocky places, right? Things are tough. Well, it's really easy for a seed of doubt or conflict or thing like that to flourish, right? It's really that, you know, so it's like we have to be on the guard, on the watch for what seed is being sown and what seed am I sowing, right? Because the seed that is sown will bring forth fruit according to its kind. Right? And so, I think this is what, this kind of leads us into the parasha that we have at this, for this week, which was Shelah. And in it, we have the story of the children of Israel have come to the edge of the promised land. Right? They set out from Sinai. They were going to go on an 11-day journey to the Promised Land. And they were going to arrive on the first of Sivan, which is when they had arrived at Mount Sinai to receive the Torah. So it was like God's getting ready to move them into the next phase of the covenant. But it took them 40 days to get there because along the way they had trials and difficulties. They had murmurings and conflict and all kinds of stuff, right? And so then that delayed them coming to their destination. Now they get to their destination, and in Numbers 13, starting in verse 1, we begin to get into the story. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send forth men, if you please, and let them spy out the land of Canaan that I give to the children of Israel. One man each from his father's tribe shall you send, every one a leader among them." Moses sent them forth from the wilderness of Paran, at the Lord's command. They were all distinguished men. Heads of the children of Israel were they. And then jumping forward into verse 21. They ascended and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin to the expanse at the approach to Hamath. They ascended in the south, and he arrived at Hebron, where there were Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the offspring of the giant. Hebron had been built 7 years before Zoan of Egypt. They arrived at the valley of Eshcol and cut from there a vine with one cluster of grapes and bore it on a double pole. It's a large item of grapes there. And of the pomegranates and of the figs they took. They named that place the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster that the children of Israel cut from there. They returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days. They went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to the entire assembly of the children of Israel to the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh and brought back the report to them and the entire assembly, and they showed them the fruit of the land. They reported to him and said, "We arrived at the land to which you sent us, and indeed it flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. But the people that dwells in the land is powerful. The cities are fortified and very great. And we also saw there the offspring of the giant. Amalek dwells in the area of the south. The Hittite, the Jebusite, and the Amorite dwell on the mountain. And the Canaanite dwells by the sea and on the bank of the Jordan." Caleb silenced the people toward Moses and said, "We shall surely ascend and conquer it, for we can surely do it." But the men who had ascended with him said, "We cannot ascend to the people, for it is too strong for us." They brought forth to the children of Israel an evil report on the land that they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have passed to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people that we saw in it were huge. There we saw the Nephilim, the sons of the giant from among the Nephilim. We were like grasshoppers in our eyes, and so we were in their eyes." The entire assembly raised up and issued its voice, and the people wept that night. All the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, and the entire assembly said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land to die by the sword? Our wives and young children will be taken captive. Is it not better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us appoint a leader and let us return to Egypt. Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the entire congregation of the assembly of the children of Israel. Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh, of the spies of the land, tore their garments. They spoke to the entire assembly of the children of Israel, saying, the land that we passed through to spy it out, the land is very, very good. If the Lord desires us, he will bring us to this land and give it to us, a land that flows with milk and honey. But do not rebel against the Lord. You should not fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. But the entire assembly said to pelt them with stones. And then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the children of Israel. I'm going to continue on and finish up this last part. I know it's a lot of reading, but we need to get the whole story. So, continue on in 14, verse 27. This is what, in 26, the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long for this evil assembly that provokes complaints against me? I have heard the complaints of the children of Israel, whom they provoke against me. Say to them, as I live, the word of the Lord, if I shall not do to you as you have spoken in my ears, in this wilderness shall your carcasses drop, all of you who were counted in any of your numberings, from 20 years of age and above, whom you provoked against me. If you shall come to the land about which I have raised my hand in an oath to settle you there, except for Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. Okay. And then God promises to bring the young children into the land later. But there we have the story of what took place. And back at the beginning of our reading, we saw that these were distinguished men. They were the heads of the tribes. Right? These weren't just random picking. These weren't people who you would expect to come back and bring a bad report. And certainly not people who would have evil intention or seeking to do harm to their tribesmen, right? And so we look at it and say they had a choice based on what they saw in the land of how to report back. They kind of reported both ways. They reported this good and they reported this bad aspect as well. But when they communicated the bad, they communicated it in such a way of defeat, as opposed to looking at it as a great opportunity for a victory, for a miraculous victory. So they had a choice in what they would sow, but they chose fear and discouragement, right, rather than hope and encouragement and faith. And so in that choice that they had severe consequences. One, they all died right away. They didn't go through the entire wilderness. They died in a plague right after this. But it had severe consequences not only for them, but for the entire nation. Right? And so why did they choose to highlight the bad and to sow seeds of fear and of discouragement? And again, I don't think they were seeking evil intent with their words. But what happened is they interpreted what they saw based on their fears, not based on the promise. So if we think back to what it said, this land is a land that devours its inhabitants. And so what Rashi notes is that God caused many to die in the land while they were spying it out. And so they were going through the land, they're like, oh my goodness, all these people are dying. I mean, all the people are being devoured. This is a scary land. But what Rashi says is rather than understanding that what God had done has caused many to die as a distraction to those who lived there so they wouldn't be focused on the spies, right, they saw it as this is a land that devours its inhabitants and this is a scary place as opposed to this is God's protection and covering over us. Mm-hmm. So they feared. And then another thing is that they looked at the size of the grapes. And they said, well, this is indicative of all the giants who dwell in the land. I mean, doesn't that make sense? If giants are here, their grapes should be big. I mean,
there wasn't some skinny giants.
Yeah, Texas is, the second promised land. But Yeah, they're like, oh my goodness, these grapes, it's indicative of these giants. Of course, this makes sense. Giants. Land devours its people. But rather than saying, goodness, God said that this is a land that flows with milk and honey and that he was going to give us miraculous provision. Look at the grapes. Look at the size of the fruit he's giving us. Right? There's
three bottles of wine with one grape.
Yeah, well, man. Well, they talk about in the Messianic Age that the productivity of the vines will be so great that you do have situations like that. I can't remember the exact phrasing of it, but it's like the vine is going to make tons of grapes and the grapes are going to create tons of wine from them. And actually, you know, even that is a picture here, you know, of this miraculous grape cluster. It's fitting with they're going into the promised land, they're going into the promised kingdom. Yeah, it's going to flow with milk and honey, and it's going to have these amazing grapes. Anyway.
There's one other thought or word picture here, which was that because the giants were in the land, and because they were giants, mm-hmm. they ate up and devoured everything. And I'm sure what the people were thinking is if we have to go into this land, we're going to be devoured too.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So the fact that they ate everything inside and it looked like there was nothing else for anyone else but for the giants was one of the lens to look through their fear.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, because they looked at the obstacle according to their own sufficiency and capability.
Yeah.
Right?
They were not lying about the report. It was
no.
True.
No, it was true. Yeah, the cities were fortified.
There's a narrative on that, right?
Yeah, it's what's your spin on it, right? Like, how did you portray it? And then how did you communicate? Well, one, they shouldn't have communicated to the people in the first place. I mean, so they were out of order. They should have reported back to who sent them, given the report to Moses and Aaron, who would then communicate to the people what the message was. But the spies reported back to all the people, hey, everybody, listen up. This land devours its people. This is horrible.
You're not going to make it.
Right. And so then it becomes a massive struggle for Caleb and Joshua and Moses and Aaron to convince the people that it was good. But they couldn't convince them.
It seemed like even the people that had a God perspective, Caleb and Joshua, they were wanting to stone them.
Yeah.
So the people that came back with the first godly perspective, were they even trying to fear for their lives because everybody else is wanting to kill them and stone them because they didn't see it the way everybody else did or something.
Yeah.
They have already said, we're going to establish new leader. We're going to go back.
Yeah.
Already, yeah.
I know. And saying, and then the thing too, their statement was, oh, if only we had died in the wilderness, or if only we had died in Egypt.
Wish granted. Die.
And they're like, yeah, yeah. Because they said, our children are going to become captives, and we're going to die in the wilderness. And God said, okay, I'm doing according to what you said. You're going to die in the wilderness.
You're going to die in the wilderness.
But those who you said will become captive will not be captive, but they will be victorious. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's where God turned it around. Right? Because he's like, no, I'm still faithful to do what I promised to do. Right.
And they mentioned multiple times by name that they saw the sons of Anak, Achiman, mm-hmm. Sheshai, and Talmai. Mm-hmm. And so they knew who they were. There were legends in the whole known world of these guys. And from what I've heard, there's legends that say they were up to 15 feet tall.
Yeah.
These guys. So seeing them, they specifically say they saw those three. And they're like, legends are real. These guys are here. There's giants, sons of the Nephilim. Like, we can't do it.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, God already told them before they even got to the land that there was giants there.
Yeah.
That he was going to give them the land and overthrow the inhabitants.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right.
And then they saw it and they're like, oh, no.
Yeah. But there,
do it.
There's a difference between theory and then when you're faced with reality.
Yeah.
It's totally different. It's like, I hadn't thought of this, but we went over to, Main Event the other day. And they have this little thing where you can walk on the ropes up high. You know, and you got your little harness and everything. It's like, oh yeah, I'll get up there and walk around. You get up there and you're like, whoa, wait a second. This still is a little, I know I'm harnessed in. It's going to be okay, but this is still, I'm a little unsure. I'm not as confident as I was on the ground. That was reality. My little daughter, she showed me up, I tell you that.
Of course.
But once faced with it, it become a much scarier proposition. And that's part of the trial that we were talking about earlier when, hey, yeah, I've got faith, but oh my goodness, now these trials and afflictions are coming. Do I have the root to hold me? Or is there going to be withering and turning back, right?
Sounds kind of cheesy as a tagline, but, you know, faith is belief in action. So it's like you believe, you can believe from a distance, hey, yeah, we can do that, God said we can do it, but then when you get there, are you going to be able to act on that belief?
Right.
That's faith.
Yeah, that is. Absolutely. And in this case, what happened? The people responded with murmuring. Right? I mean, granted, they had heard a scary, terrifying report from the leaders of their tribes. Right? So they begin to murmur. And that's what we must not fall into, is the trap of murmuring. Or believing the false report when we know what the promise was.
Right? Did God tell all of Israel that it was theirs? Or did he just tell the leaders? I mean, just, the question becomes, so like the people that heard the report that started murmuring, were they told beforehand that God has promised them the land, and then we're just going to send the leaders in to kind of establish a plan and a form of action, and then they're going to come back and give us a report?
To the people.
They would have been that would have been known like from the time of Abraham.
Okay.
And passed down through all their generations that land is going to be given to them.
Right.
And so they would have known that the land was promised. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also, too, now they've seen all these miracles of God delivering them, bringing them out, taking them to this place and having a year in the wilderness there at Sinai in his presence. Mm-hmm. And then he says, now it's time to go. You're going to take the land. Yeah, they would know.
Right.
Yeah.
I read a commentary saying that it was God telling Moses to send spies was a test to see if they were walking in maturity and trusting that God had already given them the land. He said he promised that he was going to give it to them, and it was a test to make sure that they were standing in good ground.
Yeah.
So why do I need to send spies to spy the land when you told me when you said that the land is already mine? We just got to go again and get it. But he says, no, I'm going to leave it up to you. You walk in that promise. Mm-hmm. Instead of just me saying, you know, keep walking, let's go. Pick up the ark and follow the ark and go to bottom. And he says, no, you go. Because a lot of things that happens after they go into the land is that a lot of miracles starts to happen, like the clouds during the day, the fire at day, the fire at night, the manna stops, the water that was falling stops. So a lot of the whole babysitting that God did throughout the desert stops when they go into the land. So at this point, God is saying, "You have grown enough. You should be mature at this point." To not have to need me to babysit you pretty much and have to be there for you left and right for everything you need. At this point, you need to be walking in faithfulness and trusting and, you know, walking out what you have already seen. So sure enough, they go into the land, they come out and says, well, we can't do this.
Yeah.
We need you to send your angels and do it for us or whatever, and then we'll go inside.
What were the conversations were like with Caleb and Joshua and the other spies while they were in the land? Yeah, I don't know if they go two by two.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or do they see this and then, you know, they're probably annoyed by Caleb's optimism?
Well, Caleb's the only one who went up to Horeb and saw that mountain. That's why he got it as an inheritance.
Yeah.
So there was a time of perhaps where they did venture off on their own. I don't know how they... I don't know how they did it.
Is there a word play on the word coal and Leb? Caleb, Coleb?
No.
Coal part?
No, but that's pretty cool. But but yeah, very cool. But no, not part of it that I'm aware of. But Caleb does have to do with faithfulness. Mm-hmm. And Yeah.
Haven't they done that before with the land? Like, they were told to go in, and then they didn't. Or God said go in, and they were scared and everything, and then God said, well, don't go in now, because you didn't listen to me.
Oh, yeah.
And then they went, and they were all, like, killed.
Yeah, they got defeated.
Like, this is, like, the second time where he's like, go and take it. And then, of course, yeah, it was like a test, and they sent spies, and they were still scared, you know? And he's just like, I'm just going to guess. you know?
Well, he was like, I'm done with you guys. But then Moses is like, no, please don't be done with them. Yeah. He's like, okay, I won't be done with them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's happened before. Yeah.
I think sometimes we lock ourselves into a mental mindset sometimes of just what we think the reality of God can do. When really, again, he is just, he can do everything. More than what we can even imagine through that process. And just like you were saying earlier, just about sowing seeds of doubt and everything like that, I've just been sitting back listening to this process, just, you know, in my times, how to hang out with other people and how, oh, that can't be done, X, Y, Z, this can't be done, X, Y, Z, and how sometimes, again, that overtakes you on that one. But you find that the more, like, and I really liked, Michael, I really liked what you said about faith, just, you know, it's belief in action. But when we take the action steps, how those barriers come down, and then that just opens up to, you know, miraculous faith, you know, miraculous, you know, blessing, the whole process. So,
yeah.
And to dovetail on that, just more application of what we're talking about, we all chuckle. If you study them going through the desert, it's hilarious. You're like, again, more doubt, again, and we all are like, oh. But if we really get in our own life, I think it's really easy to chuckle at our own life. And I like whoever said it, when you're walking through life, instead of having lenses of fear, like looking through life with fear, looking through life with God's promise, like putting those lenses on. And I think like very simple examples, being a mom, it's like, oh, we're going to go to the water park. And I'm like freaked out. Don't go here. Don't go here. But if you just, you know, there's protection and all that. Just, anyways, just putting on lens, because like the sowing the seeds are super important as well. But it can be as simple as a decision of, I'm going to choose to look through the lens of God's promises in this situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what happens if you have strong faith and it doesn't happen as you were expecting?
Yeah.
Because this man, they're like, yes, we have faith. Like, you're right. You know, let's go. After God made the decision that they were not going
to
get it. It's like, yeah, we can do this. God is with us. Okay, go ahead. And they went with strong faith. They still got... They lost. They still lost.
Right. They went with faith where they didn't have a promise.
Yeah.
Because he said, I'm not going to be with you. Mm-hmm. And they said, but we believe you are. Again, it was rebellion. You know what I mean? It's like, oops. Ah, it's rough.
I think they were well-intentioned. You know,
yeah.
They wanted to atone for, they realized that,
I agree.
You know, they had the wrong heart, and this was the promise they'd been waiting for, and they messed it up and lost it.
Yep.
And I think they were even willing to sacrifice themselves to go up. Like, maybe if we go up, the Lord's not with us. Maybe somehow this will still change things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were well-intentioned, and I think it was rebellion at a level. They were disobeying God's word, but I think that...
There was hope.
There was hope, and I think there was, I don't know, I don't want to say some good in it, but I feel like, there was some good in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like their hearts were right, and I feel like God probably honored them in some way for it, but he's like, hey, no, I said no, it wasn't the time. So you died because of it, but
what you're saying is absolutely right. They weren't trying to be wicked or stupid.
Yeah.
Neither one of those, right? And so.
No, but what? You know, last week it was all about the whiny babies who didn't have any meat.
Oh, we didn't have any meat.
You know, and then this week, they're all giants. I mean, it just seems like the whiners and the complainers are the people that just, you know, are like...
Yeah.
So what does that say to us, right? You know, I mean,
Yeah.
I don't know. Well,
that's just another week of that. Okay.
But that's great.
2 weeks in a row on the whiny baby. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. But that
happened like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We don't know the time frame between the two events.
These were in short order according to what the scripture was saying, because it was on the journey from Sinai to there. So it was within 40 days, I think. But anyway,
okay.
We'll leave it there. But back to the gossip thing, or not gossip, but murmuring and complaining, right? It spreads. It's infectious in a bad way. Right, and it's destructive. And I posted something to our Facebook group that I read, I think, yesterday. And it's fantastic if you haven't read it. It's a must read. It's about the complainer and the atheist. It talks about how gossip is similar to grumbling, and grumbling destroys. I'm going to read just very briefly from it. Grumbling destroys your quality of life and that of those around you. Right? I've seen that from my own grumbling. How it's affected my children, how it's affected my parents, others around me. It is horrible. Okay? So we have to guard against the grumbling. And the whole thing is that we do it carelessly. We do it carelessly. But this is your life. If you spend it fussing and sulking, you will never enjoy the good things God is continually doing for you. You will never even notice them. The Torah teaches that God hears all of the complaints and negativities. And that's why the sages teach that the complainer is tantamount to an atheist. His complaints deny the existence of God, as if there is no God to hear his bitter words.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just like, ow! Okay, wow. You know? But yeah, that's it, you know? And so, again, it's what seed are we going to sow? Because it's not just going to affect us. It's going to affect others. Right? And the thing is, even in the midst of all this, I mean, for the complainers, it turned out bad, but there's still hope, and God communicates that when he still says he's going to bring the children into the land, and he actually says it twice in Numbers 15. It says, when you will come into the land. When you come into the land. So he's two witnesses right there of, you're going to get to the land. I'm going to make it happen. So there was hope conveyed. But then what about that? You know, so he's reiterating the promise, so there could remain hope. Even though, you know, a generation would not make it in, they could still convey to their children, but there's hope for you. Don't be like us. You know, you can still go in. And so we have to have faith to take hold of those promises. Hebrews 4:2 says, for indeed we have had good news preached to us, just as they also, speaking of the children in the wilderness. But the word they heard did not profit them, because it was not united by faith in those who heard. So the word, they heard the good news, right? But because it wasn't partnered with faith, then it profited them nothing, because then they couldn't act upon it and receive the 100-fold, 60-fold, 30-fold fruitfulness of the seed that was planted. And then in Numbers 14:24, this is important, it says, but my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring him into the land in which he went, and his descendants shall possess it. It's talking about he had a different spirit. Well, what was his spirit? You know, it's one that looked with eyes of faith at what God said and not at the fear of his insufficiency. He looked at the sufficiency of God in all of these things. And I want to read this too from First Fruits of Zion. I think it's a really good perspective, because we often look at things of, well, I'm an optimist or I'm a pessimist, right? But we don't necessarily say, well, what does faith look like? Is faith optimistic or is faith pessimistic? Is it realistic or is it idealistic? You know, and you kind of throw out those things. Well, they say the optimist says the cup is half full. The pessimist says the cup is half empty. The man of faith gives thanks that the cup is half full, and he marvels that God will either make the half cup sufficient to meet the need or miraculously refill the whole cup. So he acknowledges it's half full, is grateful for it, and thanks God that it's either enough or that God's going to make it all the way full, rather than looking at the insufficiency of the other half. Right? And then people say every cloud has its silver lining. The pessimist sees the cloud. The optimist sees the silver lining. but the man of faith sees the cloud and the silver lining both. He gives thanks to God who made the cloud, provides the rain, and clears the sky. Right? And so Caleb's different spirit is that ability to be that man of faith who says, I see it, but I see it all in right perspective. And I'm going with the perspective of faith into that. And so we have the choice as well to see things from that lens or to look at our own insufficiency and fear. And our action is going to spring forth from that. And so we have to choose to sow that which is good and life-giving and according to the promise. Hebrews 10:23 says, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. That's where we have to be encouragers. We can't be discouragers. Right? We have to build each other up, and we have to walk together and strengthen the knees that are weak, right? So we can stay on this straight path. And right now, I mean, at any point in time, there are going to be challenges that we face. You know, and Ben was talking about the good things that God has planned for us. I believe the good things that God has planned for us. Now, everyone... I believe everyone in our community is going through some kind of difficulty right now. No one is untouched. It's been a very challenging couple of weeks. And that's the reality. It's been a very challenging couple of weeks. But I believe the promise that God has for us. And I believe the victory that lays ahead of us as well. I spent, in the midst of all this, I was just in long period of prayer, saying, Lord, what's going on? And the Lord brought back to me a dream I had from the first week of June, which is a little over 3 weeks ago. I had this dream. And in the dream, I was coming up to a building or a place that I knew was mine. And so you had this building and you had land around it. And then there were hedges all around near the curb, all around it. And a certain person who we know to... be involved in witchcraft was in the dream, and she had chopped down all the hedges to where they were like this high. Okay, they were still mature plants. They were still mature hedges, like thick stalks, but they were all cut down to like 6 inches all around the perimeter. And someone was contending with her when I walked up, and I said, and I just butted right in. I thought about waiting, but I'm like, no. I was like, what do you think you're doing? You know, and you can't do this. And she says, but it's always been this way. And I said, I don't care how it's been. It's not going to be this way anymore. And then she responded with, but this has all been one. And what it was is that the building had two parts to it. Okay? There was the part that was mine, and there was the part that was hers. But it had all been one before, and she had always been cutting down things. And I said, I don't care how it's been. Get out of here. You're not doing it anymore, and don't ever come back. Okay? So then she left. I went into my side of the building. She went into her side, and there was a wall in between us. And I heard her raging on the other side, just all kinds of stuff. And I just put my hand up, and I was like, no. And there was covering, and there was peace in it. And I could still hear all the raging, but it didn't matter, the raging, because there was the covering and the protection. Right, so here we are, and this is the other thing too. You know, it's like, I can't remember, I think Ben, you said something about this, but like the left hand is what you're born or created to do, right? And that's to hold back the enemy and to press forward in the kingdom. I think what that dream was saying was that land has been taken from what held it in power before. And that destruction or that cutting down of hedge is not happening anymore, because authority is being taken back, land is being taken back, and the enemy may rage, but the enemy is being driven out. Mm-hmm. And that's when the enemy rages more and more, is when they see that they're being driven out. So we're hitting a hard time. We could all fall into despair and say, wow, this is really tough. I don't think I can do it. Or let's fall back. I sure liked it better back the other way. But the reality is, that building is half full with the kingdom of God. Yeah. And God is going to make sufficient, whatever means is necessary for the kingdom to spread and increase. And that's the faith that we're going to have, and that's where we're going to overcome in all these difficulties and the trials. The enemy does not have the victory.
That's right.
In whatever it is that we face, because we are children of the Most High God, who is sufficient and over all things. He is all powerful over all things, and he has called us his own. And we will come out victorious because of the promise and because of faith in the promise and the actions that follow.
Amen. So, Cut, you were just reading in Hebrews 10. I was just looking at Hebrews 10 before you read that.
Oh, really?
Like, while you were talking, I was flipped to Hebrews 10. But a couple other verses piggybacking off what you're talking about there, but... You said we're not going to fall back. We could fall back. We're not going to. That's one of the verses I was looking at. Hebrews 10:39 says, "But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved."
Amen.
And then Hebrews 10:36, "You need to persevere so that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what He has promised." So again, tying in that perseverance and the promise.
Yeah.
It's like we have to persevere and do His will, and then we'll receive what's promised.
What's that first verse, Michael?
Hebrews 10:39.
And the second was 36?
Yeah.
This is a view we have to have corporately and individually. Because there's nothing too difficult for God. His arm has not become short. Right? His arm has not become short.
The last thing you want to be is one of those people at the second coming is complaining about all the dust that gets getting kicked up.
That's good.
You know, one thing God's like been showing me a lot in the last few months is like how teachings of culture, of like popular teachings that are necessarily founded biblically, are founded biblically, actually. He's like, everything's for me. And I just think my mind went to like a very simple application of everything you just said. That is a very popular teaching among like non-Christian circles. It's like the daily gratitude journal. And it's like, it's a really easy way. And we've talked about like affirmations in this group, like speaking the word of God over yourself and the promise He's given you. That's like a popular cultural thing, but it's biblical. And the gratitude thing is the same. It keeps your lenses on God's promises. It keeps you seeing that way. It keeps your heart in a place of gratitude versus complaining. It's like such a simple, it's like write down 3 things every day. Anyways, I know I took it like super dumbed down, but that's like one thing that God just showed.
Gratitude is very powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Practicing gratitude is key. Mm-hmm.
Literally rewires your brain as well. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to practice and exercise that man of faith mentality. Because it is way too easy for the pessimist side to come forth, right?
Yeah.
That's what we have to exercise, and we can do it, and we can strengthen each other in it, and we can know, be mindful of what seed am I sowing? What seed am I sowing with this word? With this, whatever, you know, all different kind, with whatever action it is, what am I sowing? And what will be the fruit of it?